Good morning and welcome to Shattering Myths, a program devoted to the most important and fastest growing segment of our society, to those who know that the world's political, religious, media, military, and economic institutions are corrupt, that they are counterproductive, and that they cannot be fixed. Our mission, therefore, is to look behind the headlines, to know who is working against our interest, to understand why they are doing so. Because exposing and condemning errant and treacherous schemes isn't hateful. It's caring. In our concluding hour, we're going to use evidence and reason to explore the Torah, which means teaching, not law. Because it's liberating, it's enriching, and it's empowering covenant provides the only reliable answer for you and for your family. Our phone number, if you'd like to participate in this discussion, is toll-free. It is 877-300-7645. Just one warning this morning. We are having some technical difficulties with the switchboard. When that is resolved, I will let you know. But and at the very moment, we are unable to process your calls. There was an alarming bit of news conveyed on SRN. And this morning, it is a story that has just emerged today. There's not a lot known about the story other than the pictures are gruesome. But the story, as it's presented by CNN, reads that a team of internationally renowned war crime prosecutors and forensic experts has found direct evidence of systematic torture and killing by the Syrian President Bashar al-Assad's regime, the lawyers on the team say in a new report. The report is based upon thousands of photographs of dead bodies of alleged detainees killed by the Syrian government while in custody. And it would stand up in international criminal tribunals, the group says. The pictures are similar to some extent, although not nearly as graphic as the Holocaust. It's not nearly as graphic in size or in emaciation of the victims or the mass killing of the victims, but it is a shadow, if you will, of the Holocaust. This is Muslims perpetrating this upon Muslims. I have on this program stated repeatedly that there are no good sides in the Syrian civil war. To ally with either the Assad regime or with the jihadist Sunni rebels that are seeking to overthrow him and establish a Sunni state that is unified and thus is prepared to conquer the rest of the world, that you find only savages. It is a problem that cannot be resolved. This story affirms that the Assad regime is tyrannical. They're barbarians. Assad's father is one of the greatest mass murderers in modern history. He took an entire town for political reasons and surrounded it with his military and then bulldozed it with the people trapped inside. There are a number of estimates as to how many he killed in one day, but the best guesses are around 30,000. The son of Assad has not been as ruthless as his father, but he is still stunningly perverted. The only advantage of Assad is that he's a secularist. While his government is comprised of entirely of Muslims, as a secularist, he has made it possible for Shias, Sunnis, and Christians, who collectively comprise about 98% of the Syrian population, to live in relative peace without an onslaught of terrorism. However, the Sunni rebels that are being used as a proxy against the Assad regime as a result of the stupidity of America's invasion of Iraq, which empowered Iran over Syria, they're actually worse. Now, it's hard to believe that a group of people who are fighting such a tyrannical and despotic dictator could be worse than what we have witnessed in these pictures. But it is nonetheless true. The world will be worse off if Assad falls. The world will be worse off if the rebels prevail. There are situations where you have an extraordinarily bad situation, but that the bad situation is substantially better than the alternative. That isn't to exonerate the evil. It's just to point out the reality of religious poison. Yahweh, speaking of Paul and Christianity, called it the plague of death. That's what we see in Syria. Nothing but death. Carnage on both sides. Rape. Savagery. Beheadings. Grotesque religious rage. It cannot be resolved. The world is slightly better off with Assad than it would be, in fact, actually substantially better off than it would be with the rebels, but that's not to say that Assad is anything but pure evil. Turning to another story, the Taliban, while expressing the ruthless nature of their demonic religion, murdered some fellow Muslims in a Kabul restaurant, but four of the victims were actually on their side. Perhaps doing the rest of us a small favor in a way, albeit in the cruelest, most barbaric way. This from Reuters. A Taliban suicide bomber and gunman attacked a popular restaurant with foreigners in the Afghan capital. This happened over the weekend, killing 21 people, including three United Nations staff and the International Monetary Fund's top representative in Afghanistan. The gunman burst into the restaurants, spraying the diners with bullets after the bomber blew himself up near the entrance around 7:30 p.m. on a Friday evening this past weekend. 13 foreigners were among those killed, according to police, although the killing was indiscriminate. The details of the victims began to trickle out. The U.S. Embassy said in a post on Twitter, yes, the U.S. Embassy, the State Department, is now communicating via Twitter. Social media, that at least two of the private, two of those killed were U.S. private citizens. Now, the Twitter post didn't give us any background on those individuals. I'll share their reason for being in Afghanistan in a moment. They died for nothing. Britain and Canada confirmed they each lost two nationals, and Denmark said one of its citizens died. At odds with Washington over the terms of the American troops presence in Afghanistan. You see, the Americans do not want American soldiers to fall under Islamic Jewish prudence, under Sharia law. Lots of reasons for that, one of which is that Sharia law is the most antiquated, most perverted legal system ever conceived by humankind. Second reason is that our troops have not been on their best behavior. We have a tendency to kill far too many civilians. And so Karzai is demanding that if the U.S. troops stay, they be subject to Sharia law. And the United States says, no, we're not going to do that. If we're going to stay in your country, we're not going to follow your country's laws. The Taliban claimed responsibility for this past Friday evening's attack, calling it revenge for a U.S. airstrike earlier this week that had also drawn condemnation from Karzai. Many civilians were killed. Yes, we did what we were asked not to do. We bombed a home. There was the feeling that in America that there were some bad guys in the home. May have been. But most of those killed were just ordinary Muslims. When we do that, all we do is manufacture enemy. For the number of bad guys that we may have killed, and there's really no indication from the U.S. military that we killed any bad guys, any actual Islamic jihadists, any Taliban members, There is no question that many civilians died, women and children among them. And it is what fuels Islamic rage. Now, the Islamic rage is totally hypocritical in this regard. Muslims kill vastly more Muslim women and children by well over a thousandfold than do non-Muslims. And so if Muslims were rational, well, first of all, if they were rational, they wouldn't be Muslims. But if putting that aside for a moment, they would realize that the great killer and the great shedder of Islamic blood are Muslims, and they would turn against themselves. The target, this is a statement from the Taliban. It says, and they write, by the way, in English, the target of the attack was a restaurant frequented by high-ranking foreigners, where the invaders used to dine with booze and liquor in the plenty. Taliban spokesman Mujahid said in an email statement written in English. Mujahid is the fellow's last name. Mujahid means Islamic warrior. It's a Quranic term, along with jihadist, which is a religious warrior fighting in Allah's cause. Karzai issued a statement condemning the attack, using the opportunity to take a swipe at the United States. This is Karzai's statement. If NATO forces led by the United States of America want to be united and partner with the Afghan people, and they will have to start targeting terrorism, he said in his statement. He is upset with Washington, believing it could do more to persuade the Taliban to begin direct peace talks with his government. Now, think about this just for a moment. Karzai says that that if the U.S. wanted to actually help the Afghani people, it should target a tactic. Now, if targeting a tactic like terrorism is the proper strategy, then during the American Civil War, Ulysses S. Grant would have had to target Sherman as opposed to General Lee, because Sherman was a terrorist. In World War II, the U.S. Navy would have had to target the U.S. Army Air Force, because the U.S. Army Air Force was used as a terrorist implement. This is nonsense. Welcome back to Shattering This. Yes, Helman Karzai, what a hypocrite. He says that the United States should be fighting terrorism. Well, the perpetrators of terrorism in Afghanistan are fundamentalist Muslims. Now, in this particular case, this attack really should not be looked as a terrorist attack. In fact, most of the Taliban's attacks are not terrorist attacks. And so Karzai is actually pointing out something that is intriguing here. Most of the Taliban's attacks are guerrilla attacks. They're armed militia attacks police, politicians, and governmental leaders, as well as the U.S. military and the Afghan military. That makes them a guerrilla tactic, not a terrorist tactic. Now, there are terrorists operating in Afghanistan. There were very few of them prior to the American invasion. There are a lot of them now, just like is the case of Iraq. Our war on terrorism has been completely counterproductive. Now, on the other side, of course, Karzai says that the solution here is to negotiate peace talks to establish peace talks between his government, which will no longer be the government of Afghanistan the moment we leave, and the Taliban, who's going to return to power. It'll be as if America was never there once we leave. And he knows that, and that's why he's leaving. He's going to leave, and he's going to be fabulously wealthy, and he's going to go live in some European country or some other Islamic country with the billions that he stole from the United States. And the Taliban is going to be right back in power. Why even negotiate? It's this negotiating with the Taliban is it would be exactly like the United States with Henry Kissinger and Richard Nixon negotiating peace with honor with the Vietnamese. How'd that work out? Well, Now you're negotiating with religious zealots, which is even worse than a political zealot like the communists. Now, the communists follow Machiavelli's theme song, which is the ends justify the means. They don't care how many people they maim and kill or how many lies they perpetrate so long as they end up in power. That's Machiavellian. As for religious zealots, they're far worse in this regard than our communists. The International Monetary Fund, this particular article reads, it's from Reuters, said the representative in Afghanistan was a 60-year-old Lebanese national, Wabel Abdallah. So he was a slave to Allah. And that he was one of those killed, that he had been leading the fund's office in Kabul since 2008, which means that he's a money launderer. In fact, the New York Times saying that he was acclaimed for getting along so fabulously with those who were empowered in Afghanistan, notwithstanding the fact, the New York Times mentioned, that most of those who are empowered in Afghanistan are perpetrating graft, that they are stealing the world's money. It isn't going to where it was intended. The UN said that four of its staff were killed, but counted the IMF's representative in the total, which is enormously telling. A British foreign spokesperson said the two Britons were killed in the attack, and one was a British Labour Party candidate for the European Parliament. So what in the world are they doing in Afghanistan? The other was serving the EU police mission in Afghanistan. Again, what's the purpose of that? The New York Times, reporting on the same event, said that the Americans were working for the American University in Afghanistan. The university said in its statements, one American killed in the attack had recently joined the political science faculty at the university, while the other worked in student affairs. Now think of that. You're going to go to Afghanistan to teach political science. Now, for a moment, let's just laugh at the fact that politics is not a science. If you look up in Wiki, you'll read that political science is a social science, as if the societal customs were empirical. It's a discipline concerned with the study of the state, with the nation, with government and politics, and the policies of government. It's the study of all things that Yanoa says walk away from. Well, not all things, because that doesn't include religion and the military. It deals extensively with the theory and practice of politics and the analysis of political systems, political behavior, and political culture. Now imagine, you're doing that in an Islamic country where the Taliban's going to return to power. The only rule that's going to be established is Sharia. It's fundamentalist Islam. What in the world are you doing with your life and with your time? We'll return to shattering this in a moment. One of the two Americans who died in the attack was over in Afghanistan working with the American University teaching political science to those who will never be able to use it. Even if political science were worth teaching, he taught it to those who will never have the opportunity to use it. The moment the United States is gone, the Taliban will return. They will be empowered as they were once before. It is inevitable. It cannot be stopped. It was the reason why invading Afghanistan was so stupid. It's the reason why invading Vietnam was so stupid. There was no way to stop the inevitable. That's the situation there. So why would you teach political science to a group of people that those who are seen by the Taliban once they return, just was the case of Vietnam, of being sympathetic to, of being engaged with the enemy, the infidels, they're going to be killed in a very savage way. And so every one of your students, you're writing their own death certificate. Now, this description of political science, it says, you know, it's the study of how the world of politics works. Political science intersects with other fields, including, now you're going to find here that there's no scientific connections here, including economics, law, sociology, history, anthropology, public administration, public policy, international relations, comparative politics, psychology, political organization, and political theory. Now, this is what I found interesting. Political theory is more concerned with contributions of the various classical thinkers, according to Wiki, and they list four of them. Now, they are Aristotle, Machiavelli, Cicero, and Plato. Now, I don't want to get too much into this list, but I just thought it'd be interesting to take a moment and to consider how completely stupid, just ignorant, immoral, amoral, wrong political science is. I'm going to just have two comments about Aristotle, and we'll move on to the next name in the list. Aristotle was a student of Plato, ended up accepting many of Plato's theories, all of which were wrong. Plato and Socrates really have to be blended into one because they were hand in glove. Aristotle was is best known because he was the tutor of Alexander the Great. Alexander the Great was not great by any moral standard. He was vicious. He was great in the art of killing. Aristotle's teaching included that there was a fifth element, aether, in addition to the four that were previously proposed. He was a teacher from a science point of view that the five elements that comprised the universe were earth, which he said was cold and dry, water, which is cold and wet, air, which is hot and wet, fire, which is hot and dry, and ether, which is the divine substance that make up the heavenly spheres and the heavenly bodies. Okay. So, you know, if you're going to study Aristotle, have at it. See how that works out for you. Plato was on the list. Socrates was not. They are hand in glove. The issue with Plato and Socrates is their imaginary world. Plato and Socrates basically said knowledge is not something, and nor is understanding that which can be observed. Because what you're observing is just a fake. It's a shadow of that which is real, so that what you observe is not real. Most of what Plato and Socrates believed is not true. You know, in fact, if you were just to Platoism, is this whole concept that the real universe is a perfect one, but it's not the one that we're part of, that we're kind of an illusion of that universe. And it was also the basis of what ended up becoming Gnosticism, which is this spiritual ether of this perfect world was all good, but the physical world was all evil. Now, as it relates to Cicero, before I just share, because Cicero was somebody that, you know, I wasn't nearly as familiar with as Aristotle, Plato, and Machiavelli. But before I get to Cicero, and I'll share some things about him in terms of why political scientists are so messed up. Machiavelli, to my way of thinking, I would put in the top 10 most damaging people in human history. Machiavelli is known for a book called The Prince. He wrote The Prince for the particular purpose of aiding those that he was allied with to be able to claim and then effectively deploy papal power in the Roman Catholic Church. While he didn't use these words precisely, the synthesis of Machiavelli's thought is that the ends justify the means, and that the more ruthless a person is, the better. Well, he would say, you know, it may be better to be loved than to be feared. It is very difficult to be loved, and it is extraordinarily easy to be feared. And so, since fear and love are both effective at controlling people, that to be an effective leader in the Roman Catholic Church, to blend politics and religion as the Pope was wont to do during his time, you ought to be savage. because the end justifies the means. That's Machiavellism. To study Machiavelli in any way other than to demean and condemn him is to miss the point. Machiavelli is between amoral and immoral. But he is the guiding light, make no mistake, in the intersection between Christianity and politics. But he's also the guiding light between socialist secular humanism and politics. Cicero is the other name on this list. And, you know, the purpose of this program is to shatter myths. And so I'm going to take a moment and attack why, or at least expose why I think studying Cicero is a bad idea. Now, Cicero believed that his political career was his most important achievement, which is why he studied in political science. It was during his most empowered moment that he was the chief opponent of the Catilarian conspiracy. You see, he came up with this idea, and it may have had some element of truth, that there was a conspiracy against Rome, and that the conspiracy was going to be perpetrated by using the Gauls, which he was more in cahoots with than were his opponents. And Cicero is credited with suppressing this revolt. But what he did is he had the what he labeled as conspirators executed without due process. Yes, Cicero was a conspiracy theorist. And without due process, he had those that he was opposed to executed. Now, he also established martial law. He's this guy that is thought to be the great defender of the Roman Republic. And yet, for much of his life, he was counted on the side of Caesar, Julius Caesar. And when he opposed Caesar, it was only by befriending him. It was a very strange, keep your enemies, your friends close and your enemies closer kind of mentality. Ultimately led to his death. He was also a huge advocate of Octavian, who became the first real serious, long-lived, if you will, emperor of Rome. In fact, it was his advocacy of Octavian, who became Augustus, over Mark Antony, that facilitated the effective transition from a republic to an imperial empire. In other words, he was stunningly counterproductive. His claim to fame was that he was a good student of Greek, and he translated many of the Greek philosophers into Latin. And because he could cite the Greek philosophers, he was considered rather extraordinary. Now, he became an enemy of Mark Antony. And he became an enemy of Mark Antony because there was this fight in Rome between who was going to replace Julius Caesar, who we know now as Julius Caesar, whether it was going to be Octavian or Mark Antony, and Cicero decided that it was going to be that he was going to side with Octavian, and we know where that led to Rome never being a republic again. And so Mark Antony had him killed. Not only had his head cut off, but his hands cut off and displayed in public. just a bit more on this. The thing that is the seminal event in Cicero's life is his willingness to impose martial law while claiming to be an advocate of a republic. And then in the midst of martial law, to ignore the constitution of Rome and to kill people, himself participating on conspiracy charges without due process, without a trial. Not the kind of guy that I would want to base an ethical or moral or democratic system upon. So anyway, that's the story of Cicero. We're going to return to the story of the Taliban in Afghanistan when Shattering Myths continues after the commercial break. The Taliban, speaking of the attack in the restaurant, said that it was in retaliation to the massacre, this is a direct quote from the Taliban, carried out by foreign invaders 2 days earlier in the Parwan province in the Gurd district, where the enemy's airstrike destroyed up to 10 homes, razed several orchards, as well as killing and wounding up to 30 innocent civilians, mostly defenseless women and children. That was the Taliban statement. I have long stated, and sometimes I will have somebody that will question this, but stated that what we did in Afghanistan and Iraq were invasions. We invaded those countries. That's how it's seen by the people who live there. We are invaders. We are a foreign invader. I'll not be there. Have no reason to be there. You can't come up with a single rational reason for us to have invaded either country, Afghanistan or Iraq. And you can't come up with something that we made better by having been there. Now, beyond that point and the stupidity of invading those countries, Long said that the reason you can't win a religious war with bullets and bombs, and it doesn't matter if the religion is communism, socialist, secular, humanism, or Islam, is that for every bomb you drop, you manufacture more enemy than there were previously. That even if we dropped bombs and everyone that was killed was a member of the Taliban, was a fundamentalist Muslim ready to kill Americans and Afghanis. That act by Americans dropping bombs on Afghanis is going to cause Afghanis to hate Americans. It makes it easier for the religious zealots to recruit when they can just point to the sky and say, you know, look at those drones, look at those warplanes, look at those Apache attack helicopters. They're killing your women and children. You need to hate them. You need to do something to oppose them. Killing them, holding them accountable is the right thing to do. Makes it extraordinarily easy to manufacture opponents to the invaders, to the bombers. You make situations worse. Every time that we use a drone to kill a fundamentalist Muslim, we make the situation worse. We made the situation worse in Vietnam by dropping Agent Orange and carpet bombing villages. We made the situation worse by dropping bombs in Iraq and Afghanistan. It is counterproductive. You can't win a religious war or a zealot war with communism, with bullets and bombs. You have to fight it with the truth, with evidence and reason. The International Monetary Fund said that its representative, Wabel Abdallah, which means slave to Allah, was also among those killed. He was 60 years old. He had been in Afghanistan since 2008, and he had managed, this is their quote, to forge good working relationships with Afghan officials, despite, the New York Times opines, a series of scandals that has left many Western officials at odds with their Afghan counterparts. In other words, he was aiding and abetting the scam. Reuters also reports that on the following day, which would have been Saturday, this past weekend, the Taliban used a suicide bomber to kill 13 more people, this time in a crowded market near the Pakistani Army headquarters. Now, you might say, okay, well, in this case, they were terrorists. They attacked a market. Well, they attacked a market because it was a market frequented by the Pakistani Army. The market, a short walk from the Army headquarters near the capital of Islamabad, was one of the most secure areas of the city. Two college students were amongst those that were killed, but for the most part, it was Pakistani Army personnel. Now, you might say, what in the world is going on here? The Taliban is an agency of the Pakistani ISI. The Pakistani ISI, their inner security intelligence, is an agency of the Pakistani military. And so why is the Taliban attacking the Pakistan military? After all, everyone in the Pakistan military is a Muslim. And the answer is that Muslims kill their fellow Muslims because one Muslim group thinks that the other Muslim group is less Islamic than they are. We'll be back after the commercial break.